And I will give the sermon title right up front that says it all, that I want to say it all, so to speak. Do you rush to judgment? Do you rush to judgment? Well, do you? Are you hasty and quick to reach certain conclusions by what you see and what you hear? Another question I might ask, is everything that you see or hear, is it exactly as it seems to you? I'm going to stay right with these notes today because when I put it together, I think I got rousted out of bed early that morning with the thought so powerful that I had to go put it together. Brethren, this includes me too. Have I misjudged things in my life once or twice? I want you to chuckle at that. I've made a lot of bad judgments, judgment calls, sized up something wrong, someone wrong, you name it. How often do you hear or see something and you make a determination or decision based on your personal perception without much evidence or facts to back it up? Don't tell me you don't do that, because I know you do at times, and I have done it at times. Sometimes to, so to speak, a glance, so to speak, just a quick glance at a situation, a circumstance, a person, something you heard, something you saw, and you make this quick snap judgment, it's called. Do you judge in haste? A situation, a circumstance, a decision, a person, without a proper deliberation or inspection of that you have now witnessed. There's that old term, jump to conclusions, or jump to a conclusion. Are you one at times that tends to jump to conclusions, again, based on something you heard, something you saw? Maybe it was little evidence given, but after all, no one's perception is better than yours, right? My perception is better than anyone else's, right? Wrong. That's the problem. You go to a doctor and you got a problem. You got this pain. You got this problem that you've got that you don't know what it is. And you go to the doctor and you want that doctor to do what? Well, you want him to, first of all, diagnose the problem. And you don't want to choose a doctor that misdiagnoses the problem. You want him to properly diagnose it so he can then properly treat it, whatever that problem is. Well, how often do we misdiagnose a problem, a situation, a circumstance, a person, their actions, something they said, and we make sometimes even a harsh judgment even, or can even accuse? I wrote in my notes, oh, how our thoughts and perceptions can assume to know before time and more facts or information is even given. And oh, how we love to trust and lean on our own thoughts, our own perceptions again, with too little consideration for things not yet seen or understood. In other words, things that haven't played out, circumstances that haven't played out yet, a situation that's not over. What Yogi Berra said, it's not over till it's over. And how often do we rush to judgment with something that's only in its infancy, you might say, of playing out? A little bit of problem. I'll put that mic up a little further. We, if we admit to ourselves, we're pretty good at times of passing judgment. Are we not? We can pass judgment on something, again, with scant little evidence at times, because after all, we're the greatest purveyors of what is true in our own minds and hearts too much of the time. And then we have, when we do those things, when we make a judgment in error, so to speak, there is what I call a miscarriage of justice and mercy. Because I'm going to say today, and don't ever forget it, justice and mercy are linked together. If you have mercy, you will exercise better justice. And if you're trying to give fair justice, you will have mercy. Mercy and justice are totally linked together. And God is the greatest, most merciful being in the universe. And yet he's also the God of justice. You hear that rain? There's an old cliche idiom. How many of you had eggs for breakfast this morning? I did. What better to have for breakfast than eggs? The incredible edible egg. Have you heard the expression, you have egg on your face? You have egg on your face. I was putting the sermon together, and I was sitting there and I thought, what do that really mean? I spoke a little southern, hillbilly there. Right, Mary? What does that mean, egg on? I've heard that all my life, I thought. What does that really mean? So I looked it up. It says an expression that refers to doing or saying something and being wrong or embarrassed or feeling stupid. You just did something, done something, said something that was stupid, irrational, and you have regrets about it. When was the last time you made a mistake and rushed into judgment about, again, someone, something, and realized your mistake? Now, if you had overtly, I guess, offended someone over a situation like that, then perhaps you need to talk to that person and make amends. But how much of the time everything happens in the mind and that it doesn't go any farther? But we do what? We judge and make judgments here in our minds with our perceptions and our own personal discernment. But we might reason, well, that's okay, that's in my mind. Well, Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, and I won't go there, but in that verse in chapter 10 of 2 Corinthians where Paul says to bring every thought into captivity. I still look at that verse by Paul, those words. Wow. Bring every thought into captivity. That's a big one, right? That's a big chore to have to try to take care of. How many times have you spoken or acted out based on perception, based on your own thoughts? You passed a judgment on, again, whatever, and you realize maybe later that you had overreacted. Why do we overreact? I hope as adults you know what the word overreact means. It means you act in an inordinate way. To overreact occurs because of our emotions. Emotions will cause us to overreact so much of the time to people, things they say, maybe something they do. And again, you know what the old saying is? Maybe that person's having a very bad day and you didn't realize that. And maybe you judged them a little harshly the way they talked to you or treated you, and you didn't take that into account and you rushed to judgment and you made a pretty hard assessment of them because of that. This is as basic of Christian living as I can speak about. Where do we live? You'd say Huntsville, Madison. Where's that place? Taft, Tennessee, wherever. Scottsboro. But when I ask you, where do you live? I'm speaking of philosophically, where do you live? You live in your thoughts. Your thoughts are where you live. And your thoughts will dictate how you live life. And your thought process, your mind, and what enters the heart and mind, as Christ said, it's what comes out of a man that defiles, not what goes in. So when I say, where do you live? We live where our thought process and our inner being is, and that so much of the time is where those bad things come out that Christ spoke about. I'm reminded, as I grew up, and when I grew up, Mom and Dad had the first TV in the neighborhood back in the 50s. Boy, that was something for the neighbors to see. And I still remember Mom and Dad saying they would come from the neighborhood. They wanted to see this TV. Sometimes they stayed a little later, some neighbors would. And Mom and Dad would have to wait a little later to go to bed, they said, because the neighbors wanted to watch a little of this new TV thing that Mom and Dad had. I bring that up because what was on TV when I grew up? All the regular shows. Westerns. You remember, those of you my age and older, it was Westerns. That Wild Wild West was still a fascinating time that many people were still enthralled by, you might say. And when I think about the old West, the Wild Wild West it was called, and all the Westerns that I've seen in my life, and many of you have, they had what was called lynch law. Lynch law. In other words, where they didn't necessarily feel like at times they need to try to give the man a proper trial, jury, judge. They became the jury, judge, and executioner, and it was called lynch law. And many a person was lynched without a proper trial, without proper justice. They rushed to judgment. It was a time when many would rush to judgment, and you had a lot of quick executions because of that. Due process was not allowed to play out. Much of the time, there wasn't a lot of mercy or justice involved in those type of situations. Well, what about us? Again, in our minds, in our hearts, as we're supposed to be loving one another and entreating one another as Christ would, and as we would entreat Christ. And by the way, it occurred to me just in this moment, extemporaneously in my mind, if Jesus Christ were here and you were dealing with Jesus Christ, if you were fellowshipping with Jesus Christ, and you knew that was Jesus Christ, you'd be very careful in everything you said or did. You'd probably keep your mouth shut, because you might sound stupid at times. Proverbs says even a fool can be counted wise if he keeps his mouth shut. That's a paraphrase. This is a subject that I'm speaking about that not only plagues all of us, but it remains a big problem in the church of God, judging one another in a way that we should not do, rushing to judgment without evidence or facts to back it up. When we prejudge or make a snap judgment, it's ultimately because we are literally trusting more, really, in our own opinion, thoughts, perceptions, what we think we know. And we do that so much of the time. And it's done so much of the time because of something called our own biases and prejudices. Every one of us has our biases, our prejudices, every one of us. I was sitting there this morning going over my notes a little bit, and I found this on the internet. Someone made the statement, prejudice is prejudging. Prejudice is prejudging. The definition of prejudice, a preconceived opinion that is not based on reason or actual experience. And I wrote may not be real. It's real to your mind. In other words, what you see is real to you, or what you hear, you think. You know that little word snippet. We hear snippets of conversations at times. We might walk in on a conversation and we hear what's called snippets of it, walk away making a pretty harsh judgment based on what we heard, but not hearing the whole story. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 6 and 7. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 6 and 7, memory scriptures in my mind, where it talks about leaning on our own understanding and our own wisdom. Those two verses that speak of that, of how we lean on our own understanding of things, our own wisdom, our opinions, what we think about something, our perspectives, what have you. And we sometimes do not take the time to look deeper into that situation. There is the old adage, again, saying, idiom of speech, that perception is reality. Well, it is, but it ain't. Perception is reality to our minds, but not always accurate, because our perceptions can be misguided. We don't always know why someone does something the way they do it, or they may say something, maybe in a way that we thought they shouldn't have said it that way, or whatever. And we automatically, in our minds and hearts, we tend to make judgments based on what we heard or what we see. But is it always as it seemed from, so to speak, first glance, that first look? I'm going to tell you a few quick little stories that help to illustrate here in the sermon today. A minister that I knew when I was a young lad growing up in the church, he wore glasses. He wore glasses because he couldn't see that well, and he wore these glasses. And he had gone to a local bar, and he had gone into that local bar to visit a member that was in that bar. Now, don't start asking why was the member in that bar. That's another story. But he had gone into the bar to visit the member that was in the bar. He stayed a while, and most bars, they're darker. You know, they keep the lights down, they're darker atmosphere and all that. So he'd been in there a while visiting. So when he left, he stepped out into the bright sunlight. Stepped right out into the bright sunlight. Of course, the blinding sunlight hit him. He couldn't see good anyway, and he stumbled and fell. There happened to be a member across the street that saw that and thought that he was intoxicated. And your eye probably would have thought the same thing and rushed to judgment. The minister is intoxicated. He just came out of the bar. What the member should have done was run over there and help pick him up. Investigate, can I help you? Another story that I want to tell is a funny little story in my mind. It's actually in one of the Pink Panther movies. The guy walks into the old hotel place, and there's an old dog laying there on the floor, and the proprietor, the old man, behind the desk. And the man that walks in stops. He looks at that old dog lying there. He says, "Is that your dog?" No, he says, "Does your dog bite?" The old man says, "No, my dog don't bite." The man takes a step forward. The dog bites him. He jumps back and he says, "I thought you said your dog didn't bite." "That's not my dog." He kind of makes the point, illustrate. He assumed that was the man's dog because he was laying there in the old hotel. Had a funny thing happen to me back in the days when I did construction, back in the days, my youthful days of home building. I'd be on the job by 7 o'clock. I'd be on the job wherever at 7 o'clock, ready to go to work. So many times, it depends on how far the job was, I'm out away from the house, and it's still dark in the morning because I had to get out early. So I had gotten up early that morning. I walked into the kitchen, jokingly bellowed. I mean, I bellowed it out to my wife. "Where's my biscuits?" The words had just escaped my mouth, and the doorbell rang. And I knew whoever was at that door had heard that. And I walked over to the door and I opened the door, and there stood my neighbor, my bricklayer, Dunn, and he's just looking at me. And I started trying to explain. Dunn, I was just joking. I was just playing. And he just said, uh-huh. He had already rushed to his judgment. There was no way I could undo that. There was no way that I'm going to convince him that I wasn't irate at Rhonda because my biscuits weren't ready. And I don't know how many coffee shops after that he probably told that story about me. In a small town, everything goes viral, you know. What about the night long ago, years ago, when Susan Boyle walked out on that stage, Britain's Got Talent, and the audience's reaction to her when they saw her, and the judges, they rushed to judgment, did they not? And when she broke out in that song, wow. Because she had said before she went out there, I'm going to make that audience rock. And she did. But what did they do at first? They completely turned off to her based on what they saw. Never judge a book by the cover, by the way. Some of these stories hopefully can simply make a point. We had a recent decision by the Council of 12 elders to nominate someone else to serve as president. And I speak very frankly. I know this message will go out on the website. And I speak to those of you here today, to those hearing it today, and those who will hear it. How many of you, as I look into the camera's eye, how many of you out there rushed to judgments on that decision by the council and made some pretty harsh, you might say, accusations verbally or in your mind over that? Did you have all the facts? What about sometimes when a pastor has to make a certain decision based on knowledge that he has that you probably don't have? But the only thing you can see is some decision he made without knowing why, with all the evidence and facts and reasons behind the decision. Leadership has to make tough decisions all along. Look at our president, Donald Trump. The man is having to make every day, he's having to make decisions that not only affects the United States, but it's going to affect the whole world. Would you want to sit in his shoes? I don't think any of you would. How often do we rush to judgment and simply being critical? Because the person that tends to make hasty, quick judgments, I can almost point out that that person is probably going to be a person who is very critical. You know, I said a few minutes ago that perception is reality. And it is so much of the time with each one of us. We look at a situation, we look at whatever it is, and we frame in our minds, we begin to frame in our minds, and we begin to build a case based on what we believe. Do you ever get weary of this very overused slogan in our conversations? My opinion is this. My opinion. Do you hear it a lot? I do. My opinion. The older I get, the more I want to hear what is the facts. I don't want someone taking the holy word of God and using the phraseology, my opinion. I want to know, what does God say? I'm going to give you a few statements by certain people One of these persons that I found his statement on the internet, anonymous. An anonymous person on the internet said, thoughts are not facts. Just because we believe what we believe doesn't make it so. Just because I perceive something to be the way it is, that does not make it true. Many of you who know a little bit about the National Football League, when Joe Montana retired as quarterback for the 49ers, he was a hard act to follow, right? He came long before Tom Brady. Steve Young had to follow Joe Montana. And Steve Young, the great quarterback, is a Hall of Fame quarterback himself now. Steve Young said, perception is reality. If you are perceived to be something, you might as well be it, because that's the truth in people's minds. From Steve Young. In other words, when people form, my word, calcified impressions of you or me, it's so hard sometimes to dislodge those perceptions. Perceptions are powerful, but they're not always accurate. They can be, but not always accurate. I love to mention John Grisham, the great author, because he's from my home state of Mississippi. John Grisham, the great author, said, there's always such a rush to judgment, it makes a fair trial hard to get. When there is a rush to judgment, there is no possibility of getting a fair trial, a fair hearing, so to speak. Even in the criminal legal cases, grand juries are convened to examine evidence before it even goes to trial. Even our legal system is set up, supposed to operate on the principle to have enough evidence to even prosecute. That is a fact of legal law. And yet, how much of the time, with little to no evidence, we pass judgment on many things. There is a proper judgment always, but it has to be done always with that look toward proper mercy and proper justice. Every judgment passed in our mind needs to always keep close by and handy mercy and judgment, justice at hand to make good, equitable judgments that we make. There's a verse in the Bible, John 7, the gospel. John chapter 7, verse 24. Jesus Christ in John chapter 7, verse 24. In the original King James, judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Judge not according, Christ said, to the appearance. It seems that the majority of time, if we only there again judge by the appearance, we are going to be deceived. Christ knew that better than anyone, and he said, not to judge according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment with mercy and justice. In the New Living Translation, that verse, in that John 7:24, the New Living Translation, look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. Always kind of theoretically peel the covers back a little. Don't just look at what you see on the surface or what you think you see or understand. Even sometimes take the time. And sometimes things that you see or hear or witness or think you know, sometimes it's good to just let it lie there for a while and give it more time to play out. Because so much of the time when situations play out, you always have more understanding about that situation in the end, do you not? Again, hindsight is a whole lot more accurate and better than foresight. In the Message Bible translation for John 7:24, the Message Bible translation says, and this is the reason I wanted to include this translation, don't be nitpickers. Use your head and heart to discern what is right, to test what is authentically right. Put it to the test. And the greatest test of some things, and many things in fact, is the test of time. There are so many things that only time will answer and can answer. Stop trying to figure out, all of us, when is Christ coming back? Time will answer that. And my perception of when doesn't really matter. He will come when he comes. And time will answer that. Time will answer so many things if we will be patient and allow time to do that. But most of the time, we don't have the proper patience either, which again, patience is a virtue and an inherent part of God's nature and part of the Spirit of God that is supposed to be dwelling in us, to be patient and long-suffering to one another. And if we're patient and long-suffering to one another, we're not going to be making hasty judgments and condemning at times or accusing. I said in Birmingham last week to the brethren there, I said, what's the old adage? Always when you're pointing one finger, there's two fingers pointing back. Someone in the congregation raised their hand and said, no, it's four fingers. Okay, four. If you're pointing the finger at somebody, four fingers are pointing back. I said, thank you that day to that person. In Proverbs chapter 18, verse 13. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 13 from the New Living Translation. This term, spouting off before listening to the facts, is both shameful and foolish. Spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. He who speaks before he hears a matter, or the one who speaks about a matter, or about that person, before they even understand or know the facts or the evidence that have not yet been revealed. To rush to judgment, to jump to conclusions, to provide your mind with the answers before knowing all the facts is again to overtrust and place great confidence in your own wisdom. In Proverbs chapter 29, verse 20, quoting these, you can turn if you have the time, but Proverbs chapter 29, verse 20. I rarely quote from what's called the Amplified Bible. But I wanted to quote this verse from the Amplified Bible because of the way it is rendered. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 20 from the Amplified Bible. Do you see a conceited man who speaks quickly, offering his opinions or answering without thinking? There is more hope for a fool than him. We've all known someone. Sadly, we may know someone now in relationship that no matter what you bring up quickly, they've got the answer. They know the facts. They know all about it. Next question. In James chapter 1, verse 19. James chapter 1, verse 19. From the New International Version of the Bible. James 1, 19. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. The problem with most of us is, too much of the time is, we're very quick to speak, we don't listen that good, and we let our emotions come into play. and we reason by our emotions. In looking at and evaluating any situation, any circumstance, any person, whatever, we should take the time to think and be careful to speak and never become critical or condemning. Anytime if we get into the vein of being critical or condemning, we've crossed a line. We've crossed a line. Satan is the accuser of the brethren, as Scripture tells us. He is the greatest accuser of us all. And any time that we find ourselves getting caught up in a accusatory spirit and demeanor, then we are acting out by that same spirit of the devil. And I said, when we are being highly critical or condemning, again, proper judging. And this sermon is not a per se sermon on judging, though it is. But there is ample evidence throughout Scripture that there is proper judgments that can be made and should. And it's been misconstrued for much of my life by many people. Judge not that you be judged. How many loves to quote that? Well, the essence of that is we are to always be able to do what? To administer proper judgment, but not based on accusatory, critical, or condemning. Nicodemus became a disciple, no doubt, of Christ. And in John chapter 7, verse 51, John chapter 7, verse 51, and when you think about Nicodemus, and he put himself on the line for Christ, and he put his, what's that old, another old cliche? Is it pretty much a cliche? He put his neck on the line. And here they were going to interrogate Jesus Christ and put him through the biggest kangaroo court that's ever been held, mock justice. And Nicodemus said here in chapter 7 of John, verse 51, to those who were going to do it, does our law condemn a man without first hearing him to find out what he has been doing? You're going to condemn this man without a proper trial, proper justice? Of course, they were. Yeah, they were just going to rid themselves of, in their minds, of this problem that he was. Because in their minds, Jesus Christ was a total threat in their minds to their little kingdom that they rule over, that the Romans let them rule over. And that's really basically simplistic to say it that way, but profoundly how it was. Their little fiefdom, their little kingdom, was granted to them by Romans to have as long as they didn't cause any inordinate trouble. And to their minds, Christ was a huge threat to that kingdom. But Nicodemus, does not the law allow that man to have a proper hearing? What about us? Does God's law of love, and I spoke about the law of love in a recent sermon, the sermon that I gave, title, I Need to Be Right. That sermon that I gave weeks ago, I Need to Be Right. And I gave in that sermon, brought out about the law of love. And it doesn't matter sometimes what you know or what you think you know. If you offend with it, you're on dangerous ground with God. Because the law of love is the highest law of all. We don't use what we have or what we know even to bludgeon people, pressure, what have you. I want you to turn to Isaiah 11. Isaiah chapter 11. Don't know if I can do this. I'll have to leave that off. The little writing, I forgot my reading glasses, but maybe I can read it in my old Bible. Mama said there would be days like this. Came up here without my spectacles, but I think I can read it from the old Bible. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1. There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of the ears. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the needs of the earth. If I read that without my glasses, if I missed a word, it's because I don't have my glasses. The whole point, why did I read those verses? He was the Son of God, God in the flesh, and he judged with righteous judgment. He judged with the wisdom of God because he was God. The woman at the well in John 4, the woman at the well that day that he encountered, and they're talking, and he had initially asked her to give him water to drink, and that conversation takes place, and she finds out that he knows that I've had all these husbands. Did he condemn her? You don't find that. He didn't rush to judgment. And when you read it, he talked to her about the living waters and revealed, in fact, that he was the source of living waters. That's all in John 4 there, that story, parable that's there. But we read in Isaiah that he would judge with righteous wisdom. Are we not supposed to be growing in grace and knowledge, as the scripture says? Are we not supposed to be leaning more and more to his wisdom, his understanding, not our own? And see, that is the problem. Every time, and I'm going to use this way of saying it, every time that we start leaning too much on our own wisdom, opinions, judgments, we start going rogue on God. We start going rogue on the way of God. We start going rogue into a type of unrighteous behavior and acting out in an unrighteous manner. Because to bring false accusations of itself is a transgression. And to rush to judgment in our mind. And even though you might not go to that person and say the things you believe in your mind and heart, your perceptions, but if you have committed that trespass in your mind, you're guilty of sin. Proof of that? The Sermon on the Mount? If you have hated or hate someone in your heart, you have committed murder. If you look upon that person to lust after them, and you have a mate, you have committed adultery. The mind. You see, we live right here. We live in our thoughts. What goes on in the head, the mind, is where we act out. We act out on those thoughts because our thoughts direct our steps. And so if our thoughts are being led more by the carnal attitudes that we still have too much of, then we are going to have a lot of miscarriage of justice with one another in our dealings, our assessments, our perceptions. But if we are operating more and more, trying to, on the premises of God and his wisdom and his righteousness, and asking for God's mind more in us, Philippians 2:5 again, to let this mind that is in Christ be in us, then if we're doing that, then we're going to more and more start guarding the mind. Because the door to our mind is what we have to most of all guard. Because we act out the things that our thought process say to us. The greatest miscarriage of justice and the history of the world. The greatest miscarriage of justice in the history of the world was the mock trial of Jesus Christ. It was lynch law, like the old West. They rushed to harsh, condemning judgment, and they put him to death. And it was a miscarriage of justice. Remember the mob that day? Crucify him. Give us Barabbas. Give us a thief or a murderer. Give us that transgressor. That wasn't too good of a swap, was it? Will Rogers. Many of you know who Will Rogers was. He was called a humorist, an entertainer, an author. Will Rogers was a pretty wise guy. A lot of his sayings, a lot of wisdom and a lot of things he said and wrote. Will Rogers said, good judgment comes from experience, and a lot of that comes from bad judgment. I wrote in my notes, those who have learned not to make quick rush judgments are those who have made too many wrong ones. Sometimes the best way to learn is to fail. We look at our failures sometime in any walk of life. We tend to sometimes look at our failures and we bemoan that we fail in that situation, or we fail here, we fail there. And yet, brethren, take heart. It is through the failures, probably most of all, that we learn finally how to start succeeding more. You haven't made enough bad choices yet. You may not be as smart as you need to be. Because truly, as Will Rogers said, it is so much the time for all of us that after making so many bad choices and bad decisions and what have you, that finally we start learning through those failures to get it more right. Can I say to get it more right? Good and right judgment seeks to give everyone a fair hearing. If you are truly trying to operate by the premise of God's love, mercy, proper justice, you're going to, in your mind, give them a fair hearing, so to speak, before you rush to judgment. And maybe a lot of the times, wait for more facts and evidence to be given on a circumstance, a decision, a situation. And I've seen this all my life. I have been misjudged in my 72 years. I have had too many rush to judgments over me in my whole life. When I was in school, as a young man, in the business world at times, and sad to say sometimes as a pastor. I've seen it, I've experienced it, and you have too. And this sermon today is to simply to hopefully get our heads up more. We need to stop rushing to judgment on so many things with one another. Because most times it's not as it seems. And there's reasons lying underneath that you're probably not aware of. And there's reasons at times that transparency can't be given. And one doesn't need to rush to judgment about even that facet of things. We want to know more. Sometimes it's a situation where more can't be revealed. And instead of rushing to judgment over it, you need to accept and trust that the ones involved might know a little bit of what they're doing. And I think I speak plainly enough that it hopefully resonates in your minds and hearts. Because I stand here today on this message and every message I give and every person I write, the bride is being prepared. I have a part right now, still. Right now, still, I have a part as a minister of Christ, as a pastor, to help try to prepare us, the bride. I won't always have that opportunity. I won't always be around. And I'm using that opportunity that he gave me, a calling to do that, try to do that. And this subject matter today is one that is so prevalent and so much has been transgressed one to the other over my lifetime that I've seen. How we're so quick to assume and rush to judgments and point the finger and misassess and misdiagnose based on our own perceptions. When you get it right down, bring it right down to the bare, you might say, profound nature of it all. It is in our emotions. Things that live in our biases and our prejudices. There's not a one of us in this room, not a one listening today, one that will hear the message later. There's not a human being that doesn't battle their own biases and prejudices. That word, again, prejudice, to prejudge. I want to close today. I want to just give five quick little points to maybe jot down, remember. If you remember one of them, that'll be fine, I guess, because I know that we don't retain good, me included. And it seems like the older I get, the less I retain. I wrote five little points to avoid rushing to judgment. The first one is simple. Stop and think. Stop and think and assess. And don't assume too much. Initially, just stop and think. Pause. Hit the pause button, as they say. And don't assume too much. Where do assumptions get us so much of the time? And how many times might we hear that phrase used in a conversation? Well, I assume this or I assume that. Well, that's like an opinion. Everybody's got one. Stop and think. They used to tell us in school, we got some retired teachers in here, Linda. You retired teacher, some others, I guess. Joanna's not here today. Joanna, you're listening in today, I understand. Hello. But teachers, I used to hear that cliche when I grew up. Put your thinking cap on. Those of us who are older will remember that in classrooms. They'd say, put your thinking cap on. So stop and think before you react or before you assess or assume. And maybe wait impatiently until you get more facts on the matter. Number two, this is a big one. I'm going to change my point up a little bit. Don't operate by your emotions. Don't let your emotions overrule reason and logic or cloud your thoughts or perceptions. Do not let your emotions, which is inclusive of your biases or prejudices about a matter or whatever, don't let those get in the way of considering a fair hearing, so to speak. See, the hearing, having a hearing for someone or a situation happens first in your thoughts, because we convict people in our thought process by our perceptions, again, what have you. And so we need to always, I said last week again, I'll say it here, Don Knotts had it right again. Don Knotts had it right. You know, he's called Barney Fife. You know what he says? Have you not been watching Andy Griffith? Nip it in the bud. Nip it in the bud. I'm going to shake Don's hand one day in the Great White Throne. I plan to be there. I really want to meet Don. I watched those old shows, Don. Thank you so much. You had it right. Nip it in the bud. You got to nip it. See, tell Andy, nip it. You got to nip these thoughts right here. You got to excise them before they do what? Before they go more viral and then may escape you into accusations, condemning, harsh judgments, what have you. Again, Christ said it's what comes out of that person that does the damage, paraphrasing. It is what lives in us and comes out that infects and does damage to the environment around us all. Number three, avoid tunnel vision. You know, tunnel vision, if I put my hands like this, okay, I can see all of you in front of my eyes with my hands up, but I can't see anyone peripherally either side. Don't have tunnel vision. That's being narrow-minded. That old term to be narrow-minded. Not seeing the entire field or picture. We need to have, as much as possible, pray, ask for God's wisdom and vision always. You know, we pray about many things. I'm going to drop this in the moment, in the sermon. I send prayer requests out all the time. If you're looking at the emails, you're getting those. Prayer requests are going out all the time for each of us in many places for our physical health problems. But how many times are we praying for one another for the spiritual, the mental, and the emotional health? Or do we just not talk about those things? The greatest healing to take place is of the mind, not the flesh. Because the flesh ultimately will be healed in resurrection. And the mind too. But we need to, in our prayers, we need to be asking God to help direct our mind and to guard our mind and to purify our mind, to cleanse our mind, to eradicate the negative, those things that only drag us down and bog us down, and things that live in our minds, the negative that we won't turn loose of. The sermon that I gave several months ago, holding on to things that hold you back. Each sermon again that I give is with great purpose and design. The things that we hold on to that we will not turn loose of, that hinder us and hold us back and totally hinder the work of the Holy Spirit within us. Number four, seek to assess. Look, evaluate, discern by godly wisdom, not with your own what? Your own reasoning again. What you think you see. Again, as James said, to be quick to listen, slow to speak, not quick to anger. Just all about my favorite actor of all time. And he was my brother Rick Beam's favorite actor too, John Wayne. John Wayne once said, "Speak slow, speak low, and don't say too much." That's pretty good. Speak slow, speak low, and don't say too much. And especially don't speak too much about things you don't know about or that you think you know about. The last one, point five, be patient always. Be patient always. Especially be patient with what you don't know. And don't think that you always have to know what you don't know. Did that get across? Don't always think you have a right to know what you don't know. Because again, transparency cannot always be given in certain situations. And then that's going to involve a certain trust in certain ones who have had to make a decision. In Matthew 7, verse 2. Matthew chapter 7, verse 2. From the New International Version. Jesus Christ, "For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the same measure you use, it will be measured to you." Judge as you would want to be judged. not by human reasoning, not by human self-rightness, but by God's righteousness. And a daily asking for God's wisdom, understanding, discernment, righteousness to be added. Maybe the church, and I say it this way, and let it fall on your ears as I simply say it. Maybe the church's prayers at times are a little bit misdirected and not directed at the things most important for us. And the most important thing that our prayers need to be directed for is thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And the most important aspects of our prayers need to be, help us, each one of us, to overcome. That message to the seven churches of Revelation, to be an overcomer. And if we're doing that, then God is going to begin to seed into your mind. He is going to begin to produce in your mind the things that will make our thought process and our perceptions become more in line with executing proper justice and mercy toward one another. And maybe the next time, if you walk upon that old dog and he's laying there and I'm standing there and you ask me if my dog bites and I say, my dog don't bite, and that dog bites you and you say, I thought you said your dog didn't bite. That's not my dog. Things are not always the way they seemed.